Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I just want to thank you for joining me here today. This is episode number 363. In just a moment, I'll be sharing an interview I did with Shelley Henry, who is a longtime hospice nurse who has created a company that now helps with hospice staffing shortages by bringing experienced RNs back to the field. And we talk a lot about some of the issues that are going on in hospice and why shortages might be occurring, and Shelley's ideas about how to make things better for hospice nurses. So I think you'll find that interview very interesting. So stay tuned for just a moment. If you would like to help support this podcast to keep it on the air, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support, and there you'll find three different ways that you can make donations to this podcast. One is simply to buy me a coffee every now and then. If there's an episode that you like, you can let me know that by buying me a cup of coffee, which I love. I'm very fond of my daily coffee. You can also make a one-time donation through PayPal, and you can sign up for my team at patreon.com/EOLU, where you will get some special bonuses if you become a member and donate monthly or annually through Patreon. So, and thank you so much to everyone who's already been supporting the podcast for several years now. I really appreciate your support. So we'll move on to my interview with Shelley Henry. As always, stay tuned after the interview, and I'll be back with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so happy to welcome my guest, Shelley Henry. Shelley has over 30 years of experience as a registered nurse, with 20 of those years dedicated to hospice. She has held multiple positions within the hospice industry, from agency field nurse to executive vice president. She founded the Amity Group with the primary goal of bringing experienced hospice nurses back to the field. Through the Amity Group, Shelley has successfully transferred her passion for caring for hospice patients to a passion for caring for hospice nurses. And you can learn more about what she's doing now at her website, amitystaffing.com. And Shelley, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I got acquainted with you on Instagram because I started seeing videos that you post there and started following you. And then I thought, I really want to talk to her because it was obvious to me. Your videos are all tips for hospice nurses, which I think is wonderful and amazing that you do that. So I was just curious a little about your own story and how did you get started as a nurse working in hospice in the first place?
Well, I don't have one of those really feel good stories for how I got started. How I really got started, I worked, was an ICU nurse and an ER nurse for about 10 years and was getting kind of burnt out on being in the hospital and wanted to do something where I could make some extra money on the side. And a friend of mine said, well, you got to go try hospice. They're hiring. And I said, okay, well, that'll be easy. I'm going to do that. So that's what I did. So I started hospice that way, as just on the side. Quickly found out that hospice is not easy, that it is not something that you can do on the side, and that it was where I was always meant to be. I get emotional just talking about it now, but I felt like I did more good to help someone die with dignity than I had done in all the years of saving lives from people. And so I quit the hospital job and started doing hospice full time. And that's how I got into it.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Because I had a similar experience as a doctor, and I just started volunteering for hospice. Part of it was I was to deal with my grief after my father died. But as soon as I got to hospice, I realized, like, this is the kind of medicine I was meant to practice all along. This is where I'm meant to be. And it's interesting how many of us just find a home in hospice. Yeah. And in our hearts, we just know that's the work we're meant to do.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like, what did you love about being a hospice nurse, and what were the greatest challenges for you in hospice?
What I love the most about being the hospice nurse is we're really able to do everything that we became a nurse to do. We're able to spend that time in as much time as we need with the patients and with the families, we're able to teach them about what's going on. I think that outside of the hospital, in the home setting, people are more receptive and able to listen to what we're doing. We're able to really do holistic patient care because we are in their home setting too. So we're seeing what's going on and how can we fix that and how can we make a difference. And we're able to teach the family and we're able to spend enough time with the patients and watching what is going on with our interventions and that kind of thing and what's working. And we have the ability to sometimes change quickly. Okay, this isn't working. We call the doctor. The doctors are very receptive and open to a lot of trying different things. So not everything we do is necessarily a medical intervention. It may not be medicine. It may be something else that we are able to try. And we can utilize the whole hospice team, our social workers, our chaplains, the CNAs, the volunteers. Sometimes everybody's involved, as you know, in deciding what can we do to make a difference for this patient and how can we help. And it's very challenging, but at the same time, we're usually able to make a really big difference with this person and with their caregiver.
It's so true. And I find that hospice is one area where you have to have a lot of creativity because you encounter all kinds of situations that you may never have seen before. I mean, every patient is different and every family is different. So you have to just use your creativity in the moment to come up with solutions. And that's something I really like about the tips that you offer on Instagram, because I can tell those come from a lot of years of experience and figuring things out, like how to handle this problem, how to deal with that. And that's something I loved in hospice as well. For me as a physician, I actually got trained by the nurses in hospice. They took me around on visits and I learned everything I learned about hospice from the nurses when I first started. But that I love that aspect of hospice nursing, that it seems like this wisdom gets handed down from the more experienced nurses to the newbies who are coming in for the first time.
Yeah, because it's scary. And I think that is one of the most challenging things about being a hospice nurse is you are out there by yourself. So you're not in a hospital where you can run down the hall and ask your friend, hey, can you help me with this? Or how do you do this? Or, oh my gosh, this thing is happening and I have no idea what to do. I mean, you're there, you're it. So that's probably the most challenging and the scariest part about it, because people think that with hospice, we don't do treatments and stuff, but that's, you know, that's not accurate. We do the same medical treatments that go on in the hospital. We have the same risk of complications. We have the same weird things happen, but we're just there by ourselves trying to figure it out. So that's what made me start doing the tips and stuff, because it's scary. It can be scary.
Yeah, it really is. And every patient is very seriously ill. Every single patient that you're taking care of. So there aren't any of those kind of easier patients where you just automatically know they're going home tomorrow and I know how to do this. No big deal. So every single patient kind of stretches your ability to think of what to do in the moment. Yes. Well, I told you I wanted to know some of your top tips because you share great tips. I just want everyone to hear the kind of tips that you have for hospice nurses, if you would share a few of those with us.
Sure. So I try to kind of organize my tips. I've gotten a little bit more organized with it lately. So I try to keep in kind of three categories now. So I will talk about self-care tips and nurse safety tips. I think those are important. And I'll do some patient care tips and then usually some documentation tips or some regulatory type tips. So probably the most important or my favorite self-care safety tip, and I get a lot of comments on it, which I find interesting, is about locking your doors when you're sitting in your car doing your documentation. Now that seems like something you would just think, well, I would do that, but you would be surprised how often we want to sit. It's a nice spring day. We have our windows down. We're sitting. I have had nurses that have been injured, friends of mine that have been injured doing this, sitting in neighborhoods, focused on their documenting and not paying attention to what's going on around them. So I talk about turning your car around so you're facing the way you can pull out very quickly if you need to from a driveway. Don't let yourself get boxed in. Lock your doors. Do your documenting. Don't have your sunscreen up on your car. Keep it down so you're always aware of what's going on around. And whenever you don't feel safe, leave. If you're not feeling safe, no matter what the situation, leave that area.
It is true, because when you're doing field visits, you could go to any kind of neighborhood anywhere. And many times it's a neighborhood you might not be familiar with, and you may not know the level of danger that's present in that neighborhood. It may not be, be something you know about.
Yeah. So we're at all kinds of neighborhoods. So you really just never know. So that's one that, I get a lot of comments about that one. People asking, well, how can a hospice patient be dangerous? And I'm like, well, it's not the patient. It's whatever's going on around the patient that can be very dangerous. And then I talk about, I think one of my favorite tips when I talk about when we are in those situations and we go into a home and we go in the home and something's going on and there's all the family members are there and the patient is there and something's going on and everybody's excited and they're all looking to us to fix it right now. And we are walking into, we may have never seen this person. We could be on call. We have no idea. So we're going in, we need a minute to try and figure out what's going on and everyone is scared. So what I tell nurses to do, and this is what I do, I will put on my stethoscope. I'll put my stethoscope in my ears, and I will start listening to the patient. So I may listen to the patient for 5, 6, 7 minutes sometimes, because putting in the stethoscopes will drown out some of the background noise from the patient's family. A lot of times when you put in your stethoscope, the family's going to stop talking anyway, because they feel like, okay, you're listening and you're doing something. And while I am listening, what I'm really doing is assessing what's going on with that patient. I'm watching how they breathe. I'm smelling to see if there's something I smell. I'm connecting with them because we're close to them with the stethoscope. We've got it kind of quiet now. And it gives me enough time to really connect with them and figure out what's going on. So that by the time I'm done, I'll hopefully have an answer rather than getting in a situation where I'm panicking along with the family. I'm trying to calm everyone down. And I do this all the time. It's one of my best tips, I think, especially for when you're in there by yourself trying to figure out what's going on.
I love that idea because I think the stethoscope, it kind of represents to everyone, it's like a symbol of care and also of your professionalism in a way. And so I'm sure it makes the family feel safer or feel assured, like, okay, someone's here. She's going to take care of it. She knows what she's doing. She has a stethoscope. Yeah. You know, I mean, it gives the family and the patient some reassurance. And then it just gives you this moment of time where you can kind of center yourself and calm yourself down, because it's easy to get caught up in all this anxiety and all the emotion and the nerves of the family and whatever is going on there.
Right. So it really does. It works well. And usually by the time I'm done, I'll be, oh, okay, here's what's going on. Here's what we're going to do. And you got total clarity and able to work out the situation.
Yeah. And it isn't actually probably most of the time what you heard through the stethoscope that helped you figure that out. No, it's only that helped give you that little space and time to kind of bring everything into focus and see it clearly.
Yeah. I always call it making my patient bubble. That's how I think of it in my mind. I'm making my little patient bubble.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot because that actually is really important that you can fully connect with the patient and not get too distracted by what's happening in the room around you with the family.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great way to look at that.
And I do give tips on documentation. So I have a love-hate thing with documentation. It is, as a doc, you know what I'm talking about. It has really taken over a lot of what we do. So I give a lot of tips on how to document effectively, efficiently, and just get it done. Get it done the best that we can and get out. So I won't really go into all of those because those are kind of boring, but I do, one day a week, I'll do tips on that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's all just so helpful. Just little things that nurses need to be reminded of, or maybe something new that they haven't heard before. But it's also, I think, it's just reassuring to connect with somebody with experience who's been here before, I just love it that you've gathered all these little bits of information that other people can utilize.
Thank you.
And so let's tell people on Instagram, what is your, your handle on Instagram if somebody wanted to search for you to start following you?
It's Four Hospice Nurses, F-O-R Hospice Nurses. So we're Four Hospice Nurses. And then we have the Amity Group, I think is the other one, but I'll post on both. So so we have one for the Amity Group that is just, I think, the Amity Group.
All right. That's all right.
So four hospice nurses.
Four hospice nurses. So I'll leave a link to that so people can connect. I enjoy just hearing the tips you share, even though I'm not even, doing clinical work anymore, but it just brings me back in time to the days when I was myself making home visits. And so anyway, I really enjoy those tips that you have. Cool. And then I know you mentioned to me that through your company now, the Amity Group, you did a survey of hospice nurses, which I can't wait to hear about. I'm just really interested to see what you learned from that survey. And I thought that would be nice to share here. And then we'll talk more about the Amity Group and what you're doing to help hospice nurses.
Okay. Well, when I started the Amity Group like 5.5 years ago, I had been out of the field part of hospice for many years. So I'd been a field nurse, but moved up and then got into executive management, got out of the field. Still felt like I was in touch with what was going on. But when I started Amity, I went back into the field and I was struggling. It had changed a lot since I had been in the field. So I really, as an executive, had no idea what was going on in the field. And so I didn't know, am I just struggling? Is this just me? Am I just old and just can't do this anymore? Or is everybody else having these same struggles? I felt like they were, but I really didn't know. So I thought, why don't we just ask the nurses? Let's ask everybody what they're struggling with. So that's where we came up with the idea to do this survey. So we did the survey. We ran it for 6 months, from June to December of last year. And we did it through SurveyMonkey. So it's completely anonymous. We collected no demographic information or anything on our nurses. So I wanted to make sure that they felt comfortable answering the survey and doing it, and not like I was trying to get their information or I was trying to pinpoint who they are. So it was completely anonymous. And when I just asked them several questions about what were they facing? What were their biggest struggles? And what would they like to see? So we did have a section where we got to get a bunch of verbatims too, where they were able to go in and I said, like, in a perfect world, what would you like to see happen in hospice? So I think that's some of the most valuable information that we got there. But then we ran that and we tallied all of that up. So I have been presenting that at different, like I've presented it at the National Hospice and Palliative Care Conference, and I'm going to be presenting it at the Louisiana-Mississippi Conference here in a couple of weeks. And so I'm hoping that we can take some of this data and people will help people to listen to hear what nurses are really saying that the problem is.
I think that's perfect because I was saying this to you before we started recording that I'm guilty of it myself. I assume that I know what nurses are dealing with, but honestly, there's nothing better than having the actual data and their own words to describe it. So tell us some of the things that you learned.
So, well, we found out the top three areas that nurses had concerns and where they said their top three concerns. Number one was documentation. Hands down, every nurse, just about almost every verbatim, said something about documentation. The next thing that nurses said was a problem was patient ratios. Patient ratios are just way too high. And they are quite a bit higher. When I first became a hospice nurse in like 2000, our ratios, we never had more than 10 patients. That was a full patient load if you had 10. And now you're seeing 20, 25, even 30 patients load. So, it's been a big change than what it used to be. And then the last thing was compensation. So while you think, they think compensation solves all the problems, the nurses really didn't talk a whole lot about that. They want to see their documentation made better and they want to see their patient ratios lower.
And it makes sense. Well, first of all, the documentation for any one patient is a lot more burdensome now, I think, than it used to be.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then if you're carrying a huge caseload, you multiply that documentation by the number of patients you have, and it's huge. So your description of the nurse sitting in the car doing her documentation after a patient, that's exactly right. But there's too much of that time being spent.
Way too much. And a lot of places say, you do the documentation in the home. But I will tell you, Dr. Wyatt, that just doesn't work. When you pull out your tablet, you lose your connection with the patient. It is not realistic to expect your nurses to do their documenting in the home. That is not, in my opinion, the best patient care. So I do everything in the car. I do my visit and I sit in the car and I document.
Yeah. The same thing has happened with doctors. Like, in the medical office exam room, having a computer monitor there and being expected to do all their charting in the room with the patient. And they're looking at the screen instead of interacting with the patient. And I think that's been a terrible development across the board in medicine. I know it happens in hospitals too now. They have monitors in hospital rooms and
I don't think it's the answer either.
No. So yeah, that's interesting because I read an article today saying nurses are leaving hospice because they aren't being paid enough. But I'm glad that your survey showed. I think nurses like us, many nurses are there because they're passionate about the work and they want to do the work. And it's not the money itself. It is what they're being asked to do and the stress of that patient load.
Yeah. And the amount of documentation. So we had 45% of the nurses documented said that 50% of their documentation is redundant. So almost half the nurses said half of the documentation they're doing is redundant. And then 24% said 75% of it is. So a very large number of nurses say they're doing redundant, meaning they're documenting one thing two, three, four times in a record. And I did some, broke it down to figure out the cost of actual redundant documentation. And 1 hour of every day we're wasting entering documentation that's already been done. Now, most nurses who are paid salary, they're doing this on their own time. So they're doing this at home instead of being with their family. They're having to spend at least an hour documenting stuff that does not need to be documented. And it's just getting worse.
Tell us where does the documentation come from? Who is it for? Like what is it being done for?
Most of it is done for surveyors, to satisfy surveyors. And I have lots of good friends that are surveyors and they'll tell me the same thing too. It's mostly just done for that when you get into your care plan stuff and those kind of things, or for to support eligibility so that when you get these RAC audits and the government's wanting to say, well, this patient doesn't meet criteria and you got to pay us back the money, we're having to document to that. About this much of the documenting is done to actually talk about what went on with that patient. All of the rest of it. I mean, I could document on a patient to share information with another clinician in about 15 minutes. I'd be done with that. So the rest of the time it is, simply to satisfy government requirements and surveyors.
Yeah. So that 15 minutes of documentation is actually really valuable to the staff to share. They're sharing exactly what's vital to know about the patient, what's happening. That communication is essential and no one minds doing that because everyone understands I'm letting the next person know what happened today on this visit. In fact, that's such an important part of the job. I think everyone embraces that, but it's this other documentation of check boxes and filling in blanks that someone who's not even a medical person will look at most likely and make some kind of decision about or judgment about.
Right.
And that's where it feels so detached from the work that we're actually there to do with patients.
And it's frustrating because the average nurses, 40% of the nurses we surveyed said that they spend 2 to 3 hours at night at home documenting. So almost half of the nurses. Now you think about it, you've worked at least an 8-hour day, if you're lucky, probably more like 9 or 10, and you're going home and now you're having to document for 2 to 3 hours on documentation that you find to be a complete waste of time. This is where the frustration is coming from.
Yeah.
Where the nurses are saying we need to at least get paid more. But really, we need to fix this. That if we could fix that, we don't really need to get paid more.
Yeah, and so some of the documentation issues. Like I understand the need to make sure everything's above board and that we're justifying the patients we take care of, and we justify whatever billing is being done and the days of care that we're submitting. But it just seems that it's so excessive.
It's extremely excessive. And, we have one of the only professions where our outcome is not enough to prove that we did our job. And I get very passionate about this, but I don't understand. The patient had a great outcome. Everything worked. Obviously, we did what we're supposed to do, but we have to document it in triplicate sometimes over and over and over and over.
And so the other frustrating part about that is there's not much the hospice itself can do about the documentation, right? Because it's required by other agencies, I mean, outside of the hospice you're working for.
That is true, but I do think that there is still a lot that can be done. And that's part of the solutions that I have, because we have become, at some point, a hospice agency has to say, I'm not going to make my nurse keep documenting that over and over. I'll just take that hit surveyor. You give me that ding, we'll fix it. But that's not what usually happens. What happens is every time there's a ding or something on a survey, a whole nother paragraph of documentation shows up for the nurses. And then something's piled on top of that and on top of that. So we got to fix that problem. And we got to make sure that our documentation is being as utilized as effectively as it can be, and that we're not making it worse, because I find a lot of places that's what happens accidentally, but we need to be aware of that.
And so the high caseloads that nurses are carrying, and I agree with you, since the days that I was part of hospice, that is completely new now. So to me, I mean, that didn't exist before in the past. And is that happening because hospices are not bringing in enough revenue? So there is that why it's happening?
I think it's happening because there is a nursing shortage and it's getting shorter. So like way back in the days, there weren't that many hospices. So there wasn't that much competition for the nurses. So now, you know, we have hospices, there's a lot of them. So they're all competing for the same nurses. And a lot of times there'll be this mantra or this thing that where patients are admitted no matter what. And everybody in the agency knows we don't turn patients away. We're going to admit that patient if we have to do it at 11:59 on a Friday night, that patient's going to be admitted. And I think that we need to look more at thoughtful admission of patients. Do I have the nurses to take care of it? Because I think what happens is that has become the thing. We got to grow the hospice, but we're not looking at, do we have the staff to take care of it? And what are our other options to do that? And so a nurse goes from having 12 patients to having 15 patients, 16, 17, 18. They just keep getting these patients added on. Because I don't think the revenue has really, I don't think that's changed me over the years. I mean, it's increased but as things have increased, but I don't know that that's necessarily the reason for the high patient loads.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense too. If there's a competitive environment amongst hospices in one community, there's competition for the staff and competition for the patients, yes, which leads to saying, I'm not turning away any patient. Right. We're taking all of them because somebody else, our competitors, will get that patient if we don't take them. So the priority becomes this competition that's happening instead of how do we take the best care of our patients and our staff both?
Yeah. That's definitely one of the issues.
Yeah. Very interesting. And that problem, it seems like, could be solved at the level, to a certain extent, at the level of an individual hospice. I mean, they have...
It could be. And I have some ideas for that. Now, I don't know if you want to talk about solution, but I do have this. This is a solution that I have for that. This one I get a lot of comments on when I talk about this. But back in the day when I first became a nurse, in the town where I live, there's a lot of hospitals in this small town. And there was this one tiny little hospital that there was a waiting list to go work there. They paid $4 an hour less than everybody else, but there was a waiting list. I waited for like a year and a half to get a job there because it was so great to work there because they maintained their patient ratios no matter what. You knew no matter what, if you were in telemetry, you'd have a 4-to-1, ICU a 2-to-1, med-surg a 7-to-1. If they had patients come, they would divert to their sister hospital down the road. So I said, you know, what if we look at something like this for hospice? What if we buddy with another hospice agency, one that we know gives the same level of care that we do, and when we can't take a patient, we divert the patient to that hospice, and vice versa. When they can't take a patient, they divert back to us. That way, we're maintaining our patient ratios for our staff. We're making sure our patients' needs are all being met, and we know that they're being well cared for at this other agency. I think that would work. I think it would take a little bit of thoughtful work between the hospice agencies and you know, but I think it's something that we should definitely look at. Now, a lot of people tell me my CEO's head would explode if I did something like that. And I get it. It's a different thought. But if you're not going to be able to keep nurses. You're going to have to quit admitting patients altogether. And you know, I'd rather share patients than damage my reputation and lose all of the nurses.
Yeah. And in a way that's like a business decision that to me makes good sense, you know, that, I mean, I've even had that happen trying to get reservations at a hotel I wanted to stay to that said, we're too full, but I'll share with you another place down the road that's equally good. And I think you'd like it. And that kind of referral and recommendation, it doesn't cost you your reputation or your business to do that, to share with others and to collaborate. And I think that's a really good solution. And that's kind of rising above that competitive model of we're fighting each other to get these patients and keep the patients.
Right. Let's all work together and just provide good patient care and keep our nurses.
Well, it sounds to me like the Amity Group also has some solutions for these issues. So I'm really curious about this company that you founded, I guess, how many years ago?
5.5 years ago. So I became really concerned about the changes that I was seeing in hospice and the fact that we were losing so many of our good nurses. And like you had said earlier, you know, we need those experienced nurses to teach the less experienced nurses. And I was becoming concerned because we were just losing so many of them. And I was watching just this rotation through the agency of nurses starting and then quitting because they weren't getting trained. There was no one to train them, or they were too short staffed, and it just became a cycle. So I decided to leave the corporate job I was in and start a staffing company specifically for hospice. So I think we're the only one in the country that's doing this just for hospice in the way that we do. We're not a traveling company. We are local. I think it's important that the nurses stay local to the patients they're taking care of because of all of the cultural considerations. And, you know, I live down in deep South and we're very cultural down here. And so, you know, it's much more comforting to a patient to have a nurse from their same area. And our nurses work just on an as-needed basis. There's no minimum amount of time that our clients don't have to use us for a full week and 13 weeks or anything. They just use us when they need us. And our nurses work only when they want to. So they'll let us know ahead of, like, each month, here's the days I want to work. We also allow our nurses to say how many patients they want to take. So we have some nurses that, hey, I want to take 9 patients. If I'm going to work that day, I want to work that day. And other nurses say, you know, maybe don't have as much experience or aren't as comfortable. And they may say, I want to see 4 patients or 5 patients. So we really communicate well with our clients. And it has worked out really well with our nurses. So they have the flexibility of working the days they want to and the amount of time that they want to. We do have very high expectation of our nurses. They have to be very experienced and very good at providing care and customer service and client service and all of that. Documentation, we have very high documentation standards. I've actually written a couple of books on documenting for nurses in hospice, and they have to live up to those expectations. But so we've really started to build a reputation among our clients that they know if they have an Amity nurse, their patient's going to be well cared for, the documenting is going to be good, and everyone's needs are going to be met. And our nurses are really loving it because they have the ability to do the work they love without getting bogged down in anything else. And, you know, they have the freedom and the flexibility, and they can still have a personal life. Because I don't think that people really, unless you've done it, as you know, you don't realize the commitment that it is to be I mean, it's a 24/7 job, especially with cell phones and stuff now, because your patients call you all the time on your cell phone and all of that too.
Yeah, for sure. So do you hire only experienced nurses, or do you train nurses in your company as well?
So right now we only hire experienced nurses. My goal for the future, I do want to have a training center. This is my vision for the future of having a training center where we can bring inexperienced nurses in and train them and give them a resource to learn.
I love that idea because sometimes in individual hospices, no one has the time to do the training for new nurses. And you alluded to that before. And so it's really nice to think there's a place where they could get the training they need before they ever start, which I'm sure that would increase their satisfaction and their enjoyment of the job if they felt like they were adequately trained before they ever went out to see a patient.
Yes. And that's something that we're probably going to start doing. We had one of our clients actually today reach out and ask, hey, can you come, can your nurses come train our nurses? Like we are fully staffed, but they're new nurses, and can y'all come do this? And I'm like, okay, maybe. Let me think about how it would work, but I think that would be a great thing to do. And that's really my reason for starting the Amity Group, is to provide that place and for doing the tips for hospice nurses. I'm hoping that nurses can reach out with questions and feel comfortable and know that, you know, there's somebody that can help. If I don't know the answer, I'm sure somebody that's on there would know the answers, because we end up in some pretty unique situations. And sometimes you just kind of go, I don't know what to do. What do I do in this case?
Definitely. And it's great when nurses can all share together their own experiences.
Yeah.
This happened to me once, and here's what I did. Or how did you handle that situation? And share these ideas back and forth, which ideally that would happen within a hospice staff. But when everyone's busy and going different directions, there isn't enough time to sit down together and really communicate.
Yes, like in the old days, we used to meet at the agency every morning. So we saw our team members every morning, but that does not happen anymore. So you may go 2 weeks without seeing your coworkers. If you have in-person IDT, a lot of times it's calling in now. So even if you don't, you may not see your coworkers. So there may be no connection there at all.
So from the nurse's perspective who works with Amity staffing, that nurse has the flexibility and the freedom to name the days that he or she wants to work and how many patients to see. And then would that nurse, if they get assigned to work with the hospice, would they tend to see the same patients each day, or would they mostly be filling in here and there and making visits wherever they're needed?
It really depends. So sometimes our nurses will go in and fill in for a nurse that's left or that's out on maternity leave or something. You may just pick up their patients and go on with just those patients. And other clients, even we may work with them 3 days a week for multiple weeks in a row and see different patients every time. So it really just depends on what their needs are.
Yeah, so it's kind of filling the gaps wherever they are. But that has to take a huge load of stress off the nurses who are already working for that hospice to have somebody else come in and when one of their colleagues is sick, or like you said, on maternity leave, to have someone else who can come in and help carry that load, that has to make a huge difference.
It does. It really does. And it took a while. You know, we've been open 5.5 years, and it took a while for people to really trust the fact that, okay, they can come in and just do this care the way that we would do it. But we've really shown them over the years and starting to build up that trust. And so people look forward to having us come in now.
Yeah, that's really nice. Well, it seems like this is a really good solution that works well for the nurses, who I can imagine are thrilled to have that flexibility that you offer them. But for the hospices, to be able to fill in the gaps and not have to increase the number of nurses that they've hired, because sometimes that's prohibitive too. You may have a time when your census is huge and you need extra help, but you can't just go hire a nurse and bring a nurse on staff, because you don't know if that census will continue or not.
Right. Or you don't have or you need the time to find that right nurse. So you don't rush to hire the first person that comes in. That may not be a good fit for your company.
Exactly, which I'm sure that's another big reason for turnover too, is just grabbing somebody to work with you because you're desperate and not making the best decisions.
And we're very careful. We do not hire nurses that are currently working for a hospice. So if we have a nurse contact us that works for a hospice agency, we don't interview them, because we are not in the business of stealing a nurse or, you know, taking a nurse that's currently in the hospice. We're trying to fix the solution, or, you know, be part of the solution and not part of the problem. So I do want to put that out there, that we don't do that.
Yeah. And so I think you mentioned that you're actually maybe bringing nurses back into the field who may have left for various reasons of being dissatisfied with the way things were working, or maybe it didn't fit with their personal life and their needs anymore of their family. You're bringing them back into the field.
Yes, that's our goal. And
so that we don't waste that resource of already trained, skilled nurses who probably maybe had to leave for various reasons, that you can improve upon that.
Yep.
So I know, tell us, I know that you're, again, the states that you're operating in.
Louisiana, Mississippi. We just moved into Mississippi like 6 months ago, but we've been doing really well there. So we pretty much covered Mississippi and parts of Texas. We have a plan to move this year into also Alabama and the coastal part of Florida. So that's going to be like our Gulf Coast region. And then just we're going to grow across the country. We're doing it controlled because we want to make sure that the quality of care and the service we provide stays at the level that we expect it to be.
Yeah, and I'm sure it takes a bit to get established in any new region because you have to be known to people and you have to find the nurses.
Yep.
But do you have any trouble attracting nurses who want to work with you?
No, we now back, I think we're starting to get a reputation around with the different companies. So we've found some fabulous nurses in Mississippi. Like I said, we started just like 6 months ago. We had lots of applicants. I will say that, though, for every 20 applicants we get, we probably hire or bring on one nurse, maybe two. So we're very particular in the nurses, and they do have to have that right mindset and fit. Like, I feel like they would fit, and they would be happy doing the work the way that we do it.
Yeah. So they have to fit with your company, but then be people who can fit in well in a variety of situations, probably, who will be able to adapt to each new place where they go to work. And that takes a special personality, too.
It does. You have to like that. You have to like never being comfortable. I tell you, there's no comfort zone. It's always out there doing the unknown.
That's so true. I mean, that's a great description of what hospice work is like.
Yeah.
Because it will stretch you in every possible way, and you'll keep learning in every moment.
Yeah.
Well, I'm impressed with what you've done and how you have met the challenges in this area with a creative solution that it sounds like it's working really well.
I think it is. It is working well. We're excited.
Yeah. And I feel excited for nurses to have options only because I know some nurses who felt like they had to leave hospice because they couldn't handle the caseload and the burden of the work in their current life situation, but who were heartbroken because they love doing hospice so much. And it sounds like this is the perfect solution. And so, well, I hope you grow. I hope you can grow across the country because it sounds like there's a need everywhere for what you're offering.
That's our plan. That is what we do.
So if any hospice nurses are listening from Texas, Louisiana, or Mississippi, and maybe Florida for in the future,
Alabama
in the future, how do the nurses get in touch with you to find out how to work with you or to apply?
So they can go to our website, amitystaffing.com, and they can just fill out the contact information there. And when we're ever moving into an area, we run ads usually on Indeed. But going to our website is probably the best place. There's a nurses section on our website where they can go get information and request that we contact them with more information.
And then how about hospices that are looking for some temporary workers?
So the same thing, they can go to our website. We actually just built out a new website that's going to be deployed in about a month. So hospice agencies, once they're contracted with us, they would contact us first and we go through the contract process. They'll be able to go in and just enter their needs. And then from that geographic location, it's going to text all of the nurses in that area. So the nurses can accept the job from their phone and the agency will be able to go and look at their schedule on our website. So they'll know what nurse they have scheduled to them for however long it is. So that's going to make it really easy and really nice for the agencies.
Wow, that's very nice that you have that technology available or will have.
Yes, we're excited. We've been building it for like a year, so it's now in the phase of it's going out onto the App Store and the Play Store in a couple of weeks, I think it'll be out there.
I'm curious, during COVID, did you find any extra demands for nurses or what were the challenges that you faced these last few years?
Well, interestingly, at the height of COVID, we had no work because, you know, the hospice visits, I mean, the patients that had the COVID weren't going home on COVID, as you know. So, And the patient visits were cut back to just once every 2 weeks to try and decrease exposure. So agencies didn't really have a need for extra nurses. So during that time, what we did to get through COVID is we had one of our clients call and ask and say, hey, do you have any nurses that can do home health? And would they be willing to go see COVID patients? Because their nurses weren't wanting to go in the home of the COVID patients. So I talked to our nurses and they were all like, yeah, we'll do that. I mean, we got PPE, we'll do it. So that's how we got through COVID during the height of it, was we were doing home health COVID patient visits. And then, you know, as the time, as it kind of, everything went back to normal in hospice, we phased back into just doing hospice. But I really think that in hospice, we didn't see a big change except for the fact of having to wear the mask, and that really messes, it makes it hard to communicate with patients. But other than that, really haven't seen a lot of change, I don't think.
Well, it does make sense. Like, hospice nurses are used to seeing challenging patients in challenging settings. And so it seems like they have a lot of, they can be utilized in different situations. And so it makes sense to me, they could shift over to home care for COVID patients pretty easily. Whereas even some home care nurses may not be comfortable with that situation.
Right. And that's kind of how that worked out. And we ended up training them how to do the visit with the PPE outside of the house and all of that. And so it was an interesting time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For all of us, it's, I think we all learned a lot. I mean, I think everyone picked up some new skills or new ways of looking at things after going through that challenge together.
Appreciating what we have now and had before, you know, I think it's a lot. Appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. So then one other question, is it only RNs that you hire right now? Do you hire like LPNs and do you have CNAs or do any other staffing, or is it just RNs?
It's just RNs right now, because we want to focus on one thing, do it very well, get that down. And then we may expand into the LPNs and CNAs. I really love LPNs in hospice. And that's a business model that I see coming back. Like, when I first became a hospice nurse, it was always, we team nursed, RN, LPN, CNA. We all saw the same patients. And that kind of went away, and people went mostly just to RNs because they said RNs are the only ones that can do the admits. But I see that agencies are now realizing the value of the LPNs and bringing them back into hospice. So I see that there's going to be a big need for that in the future.
That makes sense, especially when we just need more providers. We need more nursing providers, no matter what. It makes sense to utilize that pool of nurses as well.
It does. And LPNs, they're so good. The hospice LPNs, like working with your team, it's a great model.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Shelley, it's really fun to talk to you about this. I am so fascinated by what you're doing with the Amity Group and excited to see how you grow and what impact it has on hospice. And it also, it's heartening for me, because so often we sit and complain about the things that are going wrong in hospice, but to see someone who creatively came up with a solution reminds me there are always things we can try and things we can do. And so I admire you for your creativity.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I hope you'll keep putting out the tips for hospice nurses.
I will.
And hopefully some nurses are inspired that, you know what, there are things that can be done. There are ways that we can make this situation better and hang in there. And yes. Hopefully more and more organizations will get inspired to do things in a new way.
Together.
Yeah. Collaboration. I really love that idea. So I'll remind everyone, I'm talking with Shelley Henry. She has four hospice nurses on Instagram, tips for hospice nurses, and then her website, amitystaffing.com. So Shelley, thank you so much for joining me today and telling us all about the work you're doing.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Shelley Henry about her unique idea for helping hospices with their staffing issues, bringing former hospice nurses back into the field to practice part-time, and the fact that through her Amity staffing, she offers nurses so much flexibility to choose their own hours, their patient load, and to work in the way that they feel comfortable working that fits in with their own lifestyle. I feel like it's fantastic. It settles some of the major issues for nurses in the field and helps keep some of those nurses working longer than they might have otherwise, but also can help fill in the gaps for hospices that are struggling to stay fully staffed. So check out Shelley's website, amitystaffing.com, but also follow her on Instagram at her account for hospice nurses to get her tips for hospice nurses that she leaves there, which are always very creative and very helpful suggestions. So if you enjoy listening to this content, be sure to share it with other people who might also benefit and subscribe on whatever platform you happen to be listening on and leave a rating and review if you're so inclined. Also, if you'd like to offer some financial support to help keep the podcast on the air, go to eoluniversity.com/support, and there you'll find three different ways you can make a donation and support this podcast. So until we're together again next week, remember that we're here for love. That's what life is really all about. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and just love each and every moment that you have a chance to be here. Bye-bye.